Hi there, it's Sarah Raymond, and I am beyond excited to share some news with you today. My new book, You Are Not Broken, A Compassionate Guide to Uncovering Inner Wisdom and Transforming Your Life with Hypnotherapy, is now available. This book is a deep dive into the very practices offered here and with my one-on-one clients, combining hypnotherapy, somatic healing, and trauma-informed coaching to help you release those nagging beliefs that tell you you're not enough. It's filled with practical step-by-step exercises designed to transform limiting beliefs and embrace your true whole self. Whether you're struggling with anxiety, perfectionism, or just seeking a deeper sense of self-acceptance, You Are Not Broken offers the tools and insights you need to uncover your inner wisdom and live a more compassionate and fulfilling life. Head over to Amazon and get your copy of You Are Not Broken today. Thank you for your continued support, and I look forward to hearing feedback from this amazing community. Stay curious and compassionate, and remember, you are whole. You are enough.
89% of business leaders say AI is a top priority. The right choice is crucial, which is why teams at one-third of Fortune 500 companies use Grammarly. Grammarly is the right AI assistant for your team. With top-tier security credentials and 15 years of experience in responsible AI, Grammarly is how companies like yours increase productivity while keeping data protected and private. See why 70,000 teams trust Grammarly at grammarly.com/enterprise.
It is potentially like one of the biggest impacts on our health that we just don't even know. And there's been such, you know, lack of research on the modern wireless technologies, but there's such a wide body of evidence, thousands of studies saying that it's probably very detrimental. And why don't we try and make a better version of technology to where the output is far reduced? And again, it's just acknowledging that these things are problems, maybe problems, and especially for children, which are far more susceptible to any electromagnetic input.
Tristan Scott, thank you for joining me on the Mindful Movement Podcast.
Happy to join you on, beautiful day on my end, and glad we could finally make this work. So thanks for having me on.
Sure. My daughter recently turned 21, and it's not easy to find a gift for a 21-year-old that's not just giving them a cash. And my daughter has, I don't know if I would call it an addiction or her medicine, or it's probably both, but she likes to write and journal. I mean, a lot. Like, she could do it for hours and hours a day. And I saw an ad for the Daylight computer that you're part of. I understand you're the head of operations and marketing of Daylight. And I saw an ad cross my feed one day, and I was like, that is perfect for her, which it was a real gift for me, because you want to give your kids something cool that's not just an envelope of money. And it's not easy to do. And I found like it was just perfect. And she loves it. So I appreciate, you know, that it exists and your role in making that happen and spreading the word. And I'm looking forward to hearing more about how this came about and maybe some more of the details of the product itself. From my understanding, it's basically a technology tool that factors in, I would say, like general well-being and health, and tries to integrate that in, because it can be a slippery slope with technology, that as you gain some of the benefits of technology, you could really detach from some of the things that keep our biology, our physiology, you know, running smooth, if you will.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, to kind of understand everything that we're trying to do at Daylight is to take a step back and recognize where we stand with the current technology, the current device suite that we have, and our relationship with those devices. And right now, I think people who even aren't super cognizant of their health or, you know, aren't super productivity focused would probably tell you that they don't have the best relationship with their technology on a day-to-day basis. And the way we most interface with the technology is through screens and the display itself. And that's where the innovation has come on our front. But, you know, the current set of devices is highly stimulating. The business models of big tech is really to keep you on screens longer. Social media is proliferated and short form content and bright colors and children's education and one-to-one learning in schools. You know, your cars are full of screens, airports, restaurants, everywhere you go, there's screens. You stare at screens for work. We're doing this podcast on screens. It's all screens. And those screens are amazing interfaces with the internet and an unlimited amount of information available at our fingertips to learn and, you know, go down rabbit holes and really augment the human experience. But more often than not, we are distracted. We are being pulled in different directions and we aren't able to focus on a singular thing because there's so much stimulation. There's almost too much ongoing. And it's really a byproduct of the way the devices and the technology are set up. And for us, it's sad because, you know, we know that it could be so much more. People could be so much more. Society could be so much more if the tools we were using every day really did augment the human experience and output to the highest ability. So that's what we've used as like our North Star in terms of, you know, how do we get the most out of technology with none of the detriments? And, you know, the screen, as I mentioned, the display itself is the main interface. And, you know, something our, you know, my founder, CEO, 5-6 years ago is personally struggling with a lot of ADHD and seasonal affective disorder in the winters. And he noticed that the Amazon Kindle that he had was far more neutral. He didn't feel like it was sucking him in, you know, it wasn't overstimulating. He didn't mind reading before bed and picking it up, you know, right when he woke up. And I feel the same way personally. If I grab my phone right when I wake up in the morning, it kind of ruins my mental state for the day. If I'm staring at it too late, right before bed, it affects my sleep. And, you know, a Kindle type screen, which is called electronic ink, is basically like a digital paper type screen. It's monochrome. It doesn't flicker. You can use it outside in the direct sun. So you can read on the beach, in the park, get fresh air, get the benefits of nature, you know, which I've taken a deep dive on all of the reasons why that's so important for our health and our biology. And again, it's a reason why I think modern technology is so harmful is because it predominantly is just keeping us indoors in an artificial environment. And, you know, the Kindle type screen has the advantage of being used outdoors. So we use that for inspiration because we wanted to solve the core problem with an electronic ink e-paper type screen is that they're too slow to be used for full internet, full computer functionality. The refresh rate is just too slow. It's laggy and really only good enough for reading and note taking. There's been some minor improvements, but it really needed to be an order of magnitude levels better to be used for browsing and searching the web and email and, you know, social media. And that's what we did. We invented a new display technology that feels like, you know, a piece of paper. It's in the electronic paper type category, but it's a completely different, you know, type of display compared to a Kindle or a Remarkable tablet, which has also become very popular. And it has all of the benefits of being reflective. So you can use it outside in the direct sun. The battery life's incredibly long because you don't need any light being emitted from it during the day when there's plenty of light in the ambient environment. So it doesn't overheat as easily either because of the same reason. So you can use it outside. It's monochrome, so you're not getting the stimulation. And you get when you, you know, note take and write on it, like, you know, your daughter's doing quite a bit, you get a paper like feel. And that was really important for us to execute on because there's actually research that's been popping up. You retain information, you learn better when you're reading and you're writing on paper as opposed to a digital interface. So if we can bring that digital interface as close to the analog feel as possible, we get less of the stimulation and more of the memory retention, consolidation, and learning. So that's our goal. And, you know, we think we've achieved a pretty good version of that, especially for a V1 product in, you know, the tablet form factor is our first product. And then the other component is at nighttime when there's no light in the environment and you're indoors, but you need to see the screen and the sun has gone down. We have an amber backlight that is 100% blue light free and flicker free. So you're not getting the sleep, the circadian rhythm disruption. There's no flicker. So there's less stimulation and stress from that regard. So you can simply read and learn and write and be online without the negative aspects and kind of setting yourself up for success for that night when you rest and restore and, you know, your entire lifestyle. So we think of ourselves as almost like a lifestyle and environmental design company that just happens to make electronic products. Because if we can fine tune the products to be more in tune with your lifestyle and environment that brings out the best in humanity, that's when we're going to get, you know, the real success and, you know, what we want to unlock on a day-to-day basis from a productivity and, you know, mental well-being standpoint.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. When I was with her when she took it out of the box, and the screen is, it's cool. And I don't have a lot of experience with like the Kindle and the, as you said, the electronic ink, but I quickly noted it's just so different than what I'm used to. So you mentioned that during daytime, it doesn't emit any light?
Yeah, so the benefit of having a reflective screen is during the daytime when you're outside like I am right now, it can purely function through just reflecting the sunlight or the ambient light in its environment. And you can turn the backlight on, but it won't do anything because the way screens work, the reason why you can't see your MacBook really well in the direct sunlight is because the screen is emitting light, the MacBook, let's say. And when you're in a really bright environment, it's competing with the other light in that environment. And the other light in that environment is the sun. And when you have direct sun, it is extremely bright. We're talking 1,000, 10,000 times more bright than an indoor setting. And in an indoor setting, a MacBook has no problem winning on light in the environment so that it can easily be seen. But outside, it's just too high of a barrier to overcome. And that's also a great reference because brightness is a measure of like photon density, which is really energy density. So when we're outside, we're getting hundreds times more exposure to energy from the sun. But a reflective screen is doing what nature does. The plants behind you are green because they're reflecting green light from their environment. They're not emitting green light, they're reflecting it. And that is what a reflective screen does. It takes sunlight and bounces it into your eyes. And therefore, you don't need to have any lights on. And a lot of these e-reader products, some of them, they don't even have any backlight. So they don't have the ability to produce light at all. Now, we have that for the nighttime use case sake. But during the day, that's one of the biggest benefits.
That's fascinating. And then what's the deal with flicker? I notice, like, we have two lights in our kitchen. And one I never turn on because after like 5 minutes, it will flicker a little bit. And I just know I hate it. Like I don't know if it's my nervous system rejecting it. Like what is technically going on? First, why is flicker even needed in the other products? Like, or is it just something that they don't really care about that byproduct and they're just trying to make something bright? Or what's the deal with flicker, Tristan?
Yeah. And flicker is to me one of the most underrated areas of, you know, lighting and technology being detrimental to our health. And I think it's completely unnecessary. You know, I do have an electrical engineering background and I can just tell you that the standard for LED drivers is pulse width modulation control. So it just so happens that the easiest way to control a signal and to change brightness in lights is by using a pulsed signal, and that inherently results in flicker. Now there's other reasons for lights flickering, you know, just the way the RGB pixels are set up, and you know, fluorescent lights flicker for another reason. But in general, talking about LEDs is because of this pulse width modulation electronics control, and it's completely avoidable because that's what we did. We went and changed a hardware control circuitry to have a direct current, a DC control. So it's just, you know, using analog values instead of pulse signals to change the amplitude of, you know, the light when brightness needs to be changed. So
is
Flickr,
there any downfall of that, like from a technology standpoint or functionality?
I think it's maybe a little less, it's less precise, for sure, when you're using something that's purely direct current controlled. And maybe that's the reason. And, you know, energy efficiency is typically a big reason for LEDs in the first place.
But gotcha.
Yeah, it's more of a precision thing and then just a standard. And when something becomes standard in electrical engineering design, it's just copy and paste everywhere. And that's what you use. And it's really unfortunate because in the literature for decades now, you can simply look up like side effects of LED flicker or light flicker, and it'll say migraines, eye strain, headaches, you know, exacerbates aggravation of autism symptoms, anxiety, you know, potential epileptic episodes. And if you don't believe me as well, you can look this up. You can also take a slow motion video of your lights, all LEDs, fluorescents as well. Like I mentioned, they're flickering, and they're flickering at a rate just above, you know, typically visual perception. You say you notice the flicker with your eyes. You know, that's actually something that's not very common, because usually it's right above, it's like 100 times per second, a few hundred times per second the flicker is happening. And that's too fast for our eyes to see it, but it's still in the range where our brain can perceive it. And it's very stressful for our nervous system. Again, it's just like an unnecessary stressful signal that we have to compensate for. And imagine, you know, someone is tapping you on the shoulder all the time, and you're just like dealing with this background noise and stressor for no reason. And if you take the frequency high enough to, you know, 100,000 times per second, eventually it basically becomes a direct current signal, and, you know, your brain can't perceive it. But in this range of just above visual perception, which is around 60 to 90 hertz or 60 to 90, you know, flickers per second or changes in amplitude per second and above, it's really problematic. And I think it's a big reason why indoor lighting screens are so stressful on our eyes and our brain, and we feel so fatigued at the end of the day, because we're just dealing with this in the background. And one thing that I can personally attest to, and almost everyone says, is when they look at our screen, whether it's outside or whether at night with the backlight on, it just doesn't feel like a strain. It's just, you just look at it. You could look at it for hours and write on it and read on it and search the internet.
Yeah.
And you're not feeling like this weight on your eyes or your brain. And that to me is so powerful.
Yeah, there's no harshness. There's just like a softness to it. And I know, I mean, the kitchen thing, I feel like the reason why that flicker comes on is because there's some issue with the wiring. Because it like,
could
it
be.
Happens over time. But I work in a gym. I have a brick and mortar gym in the town I live in. They, I don't know, there was like, I guess we don't really handle a lot of the stuff. It's in an office building and the landlord takes care of stuff. And a few years back, I don't know if it was required, but they got some like credit from maybe the county or the state to do a bunch of energy efficient stuff to their buildings. And they swapped all like the 4-foot lights we had with, you know, some type of LED. And they had like some settings on it so I could choose the Kelvin, I think, or whatever.
Yeah, the temperature. Yeah.
But it's nice and bright. Like, but if I'm there like 3 hours in a row, I'm like, I got to get out of there. Like,
yeah.
I can't explain it. It's just like, I got to get out of here. And when I go outside, it's like, I have to like rest my brain and my eyes, even though I'm not doing like strenuous work. I'm not exercising. I'm like
You're
hanging
just sitting.
Out and
yeah.
just like coaching people where it's just like very low level of activity for me. And, but it still just beats me up just from being in there. Or even when I'm doing a podcast and I'm like focused on someone's face, like when I'm done and I don't have like a desk job. So when I were to a podcast, like that's a big dose for me.
Mm-hmm.
An hour and a half staring at the screen is like, I know for some people it's like nothing. For me, it's like a lot. So I have a routine. I go outside and I go some like exercises for my eyes to get them like reset. And there's something to it. I think that there's probably a large amount of people out there that don't recognize the stress of the technology from the screen and the light that's coming off of. And sometimes stress feels good for people, because if that's light's coming at you and it's driving stress hormones, you know, some people like the feel of stress hormones. So they might not connect the dots that there's like a negative thing going on.
Yes, but almost everyone is like chronically fatigued to some regard. Like, right? Like it's not normal that we need like, you know, 4 cups of coffee to like get through the day of just sitting in an indoor job. Like it's common, but
as I take a sip that's my second cup for the record. Nothing crazy.
Yeah, but you really notice when you make deliberate changes or you're in a different environment or you cut it out for a bit, you go on vacation and you come back and you're like, wow, this office is a drag and I don't know what's going on, but I just feel drained at the end of the day. And if you are someone who feels extremely drained at the end of the day from staring at screens or being in indoor lighting, let me tell you that that is not normal. That is very common, but it's not normal. And the reason for that is because we have all of these stressors. We have the light. They're flickering, but more importantly, they have a completely distorted spectrum of light. If they're cool white LEDs, they're extremely high in blue light, and they have a very isolated and unbalanced spectrum. So they have a little bit of the, you know, visible yellow, green, orange, almost no red, certainly no infrared light. And the red and infrared is a far more balancing, lower energy wavelength. You know, that's why red light therapy is popular. It's great for mitochondrial health and penetrates deep into the skin. I could talk about it for 3 hours, but what's important to know is sunlight has blue light, and blue light is great. It sets our circadian rhythm and, you know, stimulates cortisol production, which is what you're just talking about, stress hormone. It gives you that sense of energy. It's more dopaminergic, so it stimulates you. But sunlight doesn't give you blue without all the rest of the colors. It doesn't give you blue without green, yellow, orange, red, and infrared. And sunlight is mostly infrared and red light. It's over 50%, those longer energy wavelengths. And those balance out the spectrum. And that is why you feel so different in an artificially lit environment to a sunlight spectrum. And then in general, as I mentioned, the brightness, the intensity of the sun is so much more, it's a higher level of magnitude by hundreds, potentially thousands during the day compared to indoor lighting. And then at nighttime, you know, it's zero light. So we have duller days and brighter nights when we need the exact opposite. Right. We need very bright days and dark nights. And that's all we're trying to do at daylight is get in line with nature. Our biology has evolved over, you know, hundreds of thousands of years as humans and millions of years as all biology and life on this planet. It's designed to be in sync with your local environment, with nature. And that's the sun, you know, that's, you know, eating high quality food, that's getting outdoors, it's sleeping, it's seasonality, it's just the rhythms of nature. And through modern technology and indoor living and all this, which has been fantastic for a lot of reasons, but it has really taken away our connection to what I like to call is the real world and the world that we're designed to live in. And the further we stray from that path, the more issues we're going to have as a society in terms of our health. And ultimately, it's going to lead to like productivity downfalls and all these issues, which you're seeing proliferate on an increasing basis year on year, younger and younger. And that's what we're trying to upend. And we're trying to say, you know, you don't have to go back to the caves and, you know, live like in a cabin in the woods, although I want to definitely do that. But you can have technology and have your cake and, you know, get the stuff and work done and also be more connected with nature. So that's what we're trying to kind of pioneer here as a company.
That sounds great. Yeah, I mean, we have to figure out collectively how to not fight the environment and to harmonize with it. And, you know, humans, for some reason, for many reasons, and some of them are good reasons, probably, we've tried to control our environment through different technologies and such. I was just going to ask you something. Oh, yeah. So something I have not experienced on it, because I haven't really logged time on this thing. I just kind of played with it for a bit. But my daughter mentioned, I asked her, like, you know, what do you like about this thing? And she mentioned there's no time on it. Like, it doesn't have the time showing. I don't know if that's a setting or...
Maybe. We have no... I mean, notifications are off by default. Like, we really try and be, like, as low stimulation information. I mean, mine has... I think mine has a clock by default, but I don't even... it's very small. I don't pay attention attention to it. But yeah, we're trying to, again, what we've done is we've pioneered a hardware interface with a display so that your interaction with the technology is inherently completely different. But now we have this incredible opportunity to build on that with the software experience as well. So we're also developing our own operating system to go along with the benefits and kind of the principles that we've built with the display and the screen. And that's the most exciting part too. And it looks like, you know, notifications are off by default and you have just better workflows and, you know, you're not having all these tabs open. And if you do go down a rabbit hole, how do you, take it from being a bunch of tabs to maybe a more sequential sequence of like hyperlinks and areas to easily retrace or, you know, tap a button and ask a question so you don't have to lose the page of your book. Like there's so many things that if you just recognize, oh, I want to, you know, center this around not being distracted and really just being able to dive into your work. That's what we're trying to build. And that's kind of what's to come in 2025. And it's really exciting to get that off the ground.
Yeah, that sounds cool.
Yeah, SoloS is what our operating system is called.
Oh, nice. Yeah, so my daughter mentioned she would like get more likely to kind of get lost in the process and like creativity by not having that distraction and being pulled away. Because you could be in a creative mode, but maybe you have a hiccup and you're stuck for just a moment. And if you just allow that space to be stuck or to be bored, something will arise and you could get back into it. But if you have all these other things enticing you, like that's the moment you're like, let me check Instagram or whatever. And then you're derailed essentially. And so it's like setting you up for success by not enabling you really.
Yeah.
To get in your own way.
We have very little time spent with our own thoughts nowadays. And, you know, meditation has become this like giant movement just because like you quite literally have to like block off your calendar for 30 minutes and be like, I'm going to meditate, to just like sit with your own thoughts for a minute and not be on a device or doing something, internet, you know, calling someone, texting someone, email, when you could easily just in between something, just sit for 10 minutes. And that's when you get your creativity. That's when you get your good ideas, is when you actually sit in quiet and think about things. But that's just like rare. And it's a tragedy. And we want to restore that.
So for someone that's doing more like office-y work, lots of emails, can all that stuff be done on this? Is there a limitation of what apps you could run?
Yeah. So the first product here is a tablet form factor. And we launched that in May of 2024. And it's been a great success. We've sold out, but this is just the beginning. However, again, it runs on a custom version of Android right now. And, you know, we're adding our own tweaks and modifications to that with SoloS. But it's an Android operating system, so you can download any Google Play Store app, any Android app. So you can do email on it, you know, Gmail, Google Docs, Google Sheet. You can download social media. Again, it's monochrome, so there's no color. It's grayscale. That's by design. But you can do a lot of work on it. And, you know, the predominant, you know, best things are definitely note-taking and reading. But I love writing on it. You can connect a keyboard via Bluetooth or hardwire in and get a stand. And it's amazing. You get almost like a typewriter kind of an experience, and you can just lock in and type, or for emails, cranking them out. It's great. For super high, you know, creativity type processes and design work, it's probably not the best. And, you know, depending on how much data you need to like do in certain programs or tools, you might overwhelm the processor. It's a tablet. It's not meant for some crazy task, but I would say for 95 to like 98% of what most people are doing on a daily basis, which is messaging, emails, internet browsing, Sheets, Docs, social media, you can do all of that. And I will say it's a completely different experience when you do it on a daily computer. And I even left my laptop in the office for 3 weeks just as a forced experiment to only use the daily computer. And I got, you know, almost all my work done on there. And it was incredible.
That's cool. So what are the other like health related considerations, I guess, is involved in the design or engineering, other than the light that is coming off of it, really like that type of screen, the monochrome the flicker. Are there any other things?
Yeah, the light, the flicker, you know, the fact that you can use it outside and, you know, being in the sun, fresh air, grounded. The amber backlight, 100% blue light free, is not going to disrupt your sleep. Yeah, the less stimulation and dopaminergic type monochrome experience. We're also going to have, you know, a priority in the future to just keep iterating on that, because this is just the first revision. We want to add like some infrared into the backlight spectrum, which will make it even more like pretty much identical to a candle or a campfire spectrum of light.
Oh, interesting. We
are proponents that we should be cognizant that man-made electromagnetic fields are potentially detrimental to your health. So radio frequencies and anything else in terms of artificial EMFs. So we have some ideas there. We're going to roll out like a smart airplane mode next year, which pretty much just puts your device in airplane mode by default. So if you're not using it or you're note-taking and don't need to be on the internet, there's no reason you need to be exposed to, you know, wireless radiation. And, you know, we want to just see what happens when we try and put a deliberate effort forth to optimize it on the hardware level also.
So it'll automatically sense your use and then just downshift into airplane mode. That's cool.
Yeah. And people don't realize, like, my daylight is right in front of me right now. If it's not in airplane mode, like manually, that's going to be pinging the Wi-Fi network and, you know, giving me radio frequency EMFs for no reason. Like, I'm not even using it. And think what you will, EMFs is, you know, I would say I'm an expert in EMFs more than any other topic in the health space. And it is potentially like one of the biggest impacts on our health that we just don't even know. And there's been such, you know, lack of research on the modern wireless technologies, but there's such a wide body of evidence, thousands of studies saying that it's probably very detrimental. And why don't we try and make a better version of technology to where the output is far reduced? And again, it's just acknowledging that these things are problems, maybe problems, and especially for children, which are far more susceptible to any electromagnetic input. Why not? Your iPhone quite literally comes with a warning label to never hold it on your body. So there might be something there. Because
it does?
Most people don't realize that all smartphones come with a warning label that says, due to, you know, radio frequency radiation, this device should never be held on your body. You should always use hands-free speakerphone and keep it, you know, 1 to 2 centimeters away when in use. And that's, you know,
that's terrifying.
Yeah. And guess what? If you get a brain tumor, you can't sue them. That's what that does. And if you look up how they actually do the safety threshold testing for specific absorption rate, they use like a 6'2", 220-pound bio dummy and do calculations. And the standards haven't been updated since 1996. That was the year I was born. And, you know, people like RFK Jr. and the Children's Health Defense have quite literally sued the FCC for the negligence for these standards not being updated for protecting people. And they won in a court of law, but nothing has changed. So
that's testing it on the old technology. And now I would assume today's stuff is probably more powerful.
Well, here's the thing. A lot of these studies are on like 2G, 3G. And, you know, we've just added more layers on top of that with 4G and 5G, of course, is the one that everyone freaks out about. And I would say there's a big conversation to be had there, but it's just adding, you know, a cherry on top of the cake. You're already exposed to this and, you know, you're in Wi-Fi. When was the last time you went without being in some sort of Wi-Fi environment or cellular data environment? Like, nobody has a break from these signals, and it's the constant assault and the duration that's really a problem. So if we give our body a break, it's quite resilient. But
there's a reason you feel better when you go camping.
That's
part of it. I mean, I find the whole EMF thing to be, I don't want to say overwhelming, but it's definitely an uphill battle, and you can't be perfect. It's not as simple as like, oh, I don't eat this one toxic food. It's like, I mean, I use one of these little protectors on my phone and try to It's supposed to shield some. We turn our Wi-Fi off at night.
Oh, perfect. Okay.
Most nights. Sometimes we forget. Yeah. The big thing we do, which was a great investment, is we have a kill switch.
Yes.
And we had a guy on the podcast years ago.
Is it EMF safe?
Yes.
EMF safe.
Anthony, yeah.
Oh, I love Anthony. We're friends.
Cool. So for listeners, if you haven't heard me talk about this, I mean, we have a remote control at our bedside, and our kids have one on their side of the house. So we have like two zones, and basically with a click of a button, it shuts down the electricity to like the whole second floor where our bedrooms are. And some of the stuff on the first floor that seems to affect, like when we did the audit to see which breakers had the biggest impact on our sleep areas, the chandelier of our dining room that's under our bedroom had like a massive impact. So what you basically do is you kind of go through your breakers and you figure out, you hold a EMF reader while you lay in bed where you're going to sleep, because that's the most important place to like prioritize where your adjustments are going to be. And then you flip all these breakers one at a time and you see which ones have the biggest impact on your sleep area. And then you run those through, I guess it's called a relay. I'm not big into like how electrical stuff works, but it's like a relay. So we have this extra little box near our, like our circuit breaker in our house. And when we hit this button remotely, it just shuts down all the ones we ran through this. And you feel it. Like you feel it instantaneously. Like my wife and I have this like habit of just sighing when we hit the button. Like it's really remarkable. And it just makes you wonder, like maybe that's not a terrible thing to have a little exposure, but 8 hours a day for year upon year upon year upon decade, like how could that not, if it makes you feel good when you turn it off, how could it not be detracting from your well-being on some level?
Yeah. Well, I'm glad. I mean, I never know what to expect from the EMF side of things, because that's, again, it's like my area that I've taken a deep dive into the most and I podcast about often. And everything you just said is spot on. It's the most inconvenient truth possible, that wireless technology, that power, electrical power in our house can be detrimental to our health. And it's something we're exposed to 24/7, 365 days a year. And you can't be perfect. No, you can't cut it all out. It's not realistic, but you can do things on the positive spin. You can mitigate your exposure tremendously by just, you know, not holding your phone next to your brain for phone calls and putting it on airplane mode. And, you know, if you feel very inclined, that's like advanced stuff, is getting an EMF safe switch. I have no power on in my bedrooms. They're just, breakers are off all the time.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, I just go in there to sleep and that's it. And
that's smart.
You feel the difference. Yeah. When you go camping. And then if you really feel inclined or don't believe me, you know, you can go look up the thousands of studies that exist, you know, Environmental Health Trust, Dr. Henry Lai, Dr. Martin Powell, on all these guys have put together so many reviews and articles. This was, you know, a hotly debated topic in the 60s, 70s, 80s as well, on the power frequency side of things and the emergence of radio frequencies. And then think about how much wireless technology has proliferated in the last 20 years and even the last 10 years since smartphones have come about. And yeah, there are no good studies on 4G or 5G, and we're just constantly irradiated. So why can't we think about potential solutions? Because we can engineer solutions. If every house was built with shielded cabling, you wouldn't even need to turn off the power at night. You would just have, you know, 90, 95% reduction in your EMFs because it's shielded. If every wireless router came with an automatic timer that you configure, okay, it turns off at 10 p.m. It comes back on at 6. Do you need the internet on at 2 a.m.? No,
it's
you
kind
don't.
Of annoying that that's not easily available already. Like if I turn off, we have a Verizon in our house. Like it's a pain to use their app. It takes like, I mean, this sounds silly to say 3 or 4 minutes is a pain, but it shouldn't take 3 or 4 minutes to pull up an app and hit a button to say off or to put it on a schedule, like you say.
An outlet timer is probably the best solution, to be honest. And you can buy those at like Home Depot for $10-$20. But right. I will tell you, I've been trying to hardwire my internet and completely kill the Wi-Fi, which you can do very easily for one device. You just plug directly into the modem and the router is done. But you used to be able to go into the command prompt and type in the IP address of your router and disable all the Wi-Fi antennas. You can't even do that anymore. So I had to order like a new modem, and you know, I'm hardwired right now, but I have the router still active, but I have like two Faraday beanies over my Wi-Fi, reducing it by like a router by like 95%, which it's just, yeah.
How does it work then? If it's like, how do you?
It's I'm hardwired on the internet.
Oh, because you're using the hardwire.
But it works like, if I'm within 10 feet of the router, it works because there's like a tiny little gap in there. But if I'm like on the other side of the house, it doesn't work. And that's great because during the day, again, I'm just trying to play around with it. And I measure all this stuff with meters. And yeah, I think if we can think of ways now, don't get me wrong, we fixed light is easy. I could fix lighting like that. You know, let's go back to incandescence. Let's get full spectrum bulbs. Let's take flicker out. Whatever the sun is doing, we should be doing. Let's set it up with timing and different angles. We could get, you know, control mechanisms to do that. Lighting is easy. Electromagnetic fields are not easy because radio frequencies, if I go out in the mountains of Wyoming and I bring my EMF meter, which is measuring 200 megahertz to 8 gigahertz, the reading is zero. There is no EMFs in that spectrum in nature. There's nothing. And there's nothing in nature at 100 kilohertz or, you know, all the entire FM, AM radio, all of that, 5G, it's all alien. So there's technically like no right amount. So it's a much more nuanced conversation, and it's much more complicated because no one is just going to hardwire their internet. It's extremely challenging, even for me. So how do we do wireless that's better? And I have a whole slew of ideas that, you know, we're going to put into next generation daylight products, and, you know, we're going to try and get, you know, grants to research this stuff.
Cool.
And it's amazing that, again, like people like RFK Jr. are coming into office and is a public proponent that we need safer wireless technology, especially for kids. So that's what I'm most excited to innovate on in the future and continue iterating on the, you know, the light piece as well.
Well, that's exciting. Yeah, I'd like to hear in the future what you guys come up with that. Yeah, we're hardwired in most of our stuff. And then
nice.
Just when somebody needs to be on a laptop, they'll turn it on. And then usually forget to turn it off. And then I'll be the annoying father at the end of the night, like, did you turn off the Wi-Fi? It's funny because we recently got a plunge pool installed, which is basically, it's like a small pool, but it converts to a hot tub. A real nice luxury.
Nice.
But the heater, the guy, it was, it's internet based. So you have like an app to like manage mm-hmm. the temperature. And everybody, all the like, the contractors working on this project, they all think I'm nuts because I'm like, I made it all be hardwired. They're like, what, you don't have Wi-Fi? I was like, well, we have it, but we try to keep it off. And I mean, it was like, they're looking at me like I'm crazy. And maybe I am crazy. I don't know. But
no.
And our HVAC, like whenever that gets serviced, like they have all this remote stuff, but I have it all unplugged. So they get to the house to the service. They have to like hook everything up to read the stuff. And they're like, you could tell they're like, I'm like the annoying customer to them because I don't just have the Wi-Fi running all the time.
We're the same, you know, everything's unplugged, you know, TV's unplugged, lights are unplugged, no power in the bedroom, Wi-Fi's off. I got cables running from the earth to my bed to like ground my bed and like have a grounding mat.
Oh, that's actually, like the legit way of grounding.
Yeah.
That's
like the don't ground into your outlet. I'm not.
Oh, why not? Now you're killing me. Why not? Why is that? Learn me something.
You're taking a risk by being plugged into a 60 hertz circuit. And if you trust the wiring of your house, maybe you'll be fine. But the way we run like neutral to ground in our electrical system is not worth risking, in my opinion. And for me, there's anecdotal evidence pointing, you know, if you ask someone like Anthony about it, he'll say the same thing, from EMF safe.
So when you test it with the little plug, to show.
If you test like your outlet in reference to earth ground, you will get a slightly different voltage, which means there's a slightly, it's almost like a floating ground, at least in my house. My house is wired pretty poorly, but for me, I don't even want to take the chance. I want an isolated path from the earth's negative surface charge to me. And if there's anything connected to a 60 hertz circuit, I want that to be dissipated into ground. Like I have a metal bed frame right now. I'm on Facebook searching for a wood wooden one, anything metal is going to hold charge because it's a conductor. So if it's a metal conductor in an electric field, it's going to hold that charge. And then if that's connected to you, it's going to raise your body voltage. So if you ground the bed, which is what I do, I have that on separate wire to ground than the one I'm taking and putting my, you know, feet on when I'm sleeping. Actually, right now I'm on my deck. I installed like a tiny little plate that goes to just, it's plugged into a stake in the ground because my deck is awesome. I get all the sun. I was like, well, I want to be connected to the earth. So that's like what I do on the weekends. But
nice.
It's fun to think about all this stuff because this, what you said, the smart device revolution, the Internet of Things, this stuff is toxic for no reason. Smart homes could not be less intelligent. And you don't need your washing machine talking to your smart meter. It's absolutely unnecessary.
Right.
And we're just being blasted with, you know, way more, you know, signals than is needed. And it's just added stressors.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned non-native electromagnetic fields. And, you know, somebody could make the argument it's non-native now, but it'll be like one thing I definitely recognize from working in a gym for the last 15 years or so is humans are continuously adapting, even as they get up there in age. And I wonder, are they like, I do think they're harmful now. And also they might be less harmful over time as they become less non-native, as they become more native, as you're born into that environment. It'll be interesting to see if we live long enough to see if humans, you know, to see how the biology adjusts to that. And not to mention the biology of all the ecosystem that's in us. Like, I know that there's some people that they feel worse in Wi-Fi and attribute it more to its effect on the microbes in their intestines.
Yes.
The negative effects. And like, there's so many moving parts here, and we are in the absolute infancy stage of trying to figure it out. So like, hopefully you get both. Hopefully you get a big, revolution of truly smarter technology that accounts for this stuff and makes the place safer. And also that our biology finds a way to, you know, learn how not to be negatively affected by these things. And I don't know what kind of time frame that would take.
Yeah. So I mean, I hope I'm wrong that like all this stuff is like not bad for us, but you're right. It's insanely complex, and our body uses electromagnetic fields to communicate, to signal. Like this is like the baseline of biology and interactions. And that's why we know nothing. We know like not even 1% of how this all works. And you're right. The microbes are, you know, there's more foreign cells in our body than there are, you know, human cells. And that's all because of our microbiome. Biota, and they're extremely sensitive to their electromagnetic environment. And then we have, you know, like our mitochondria that is also a kind of a weird alien organism that's evolved over time to be the, you know, the powerhouse of the cell, quote unquote, but it's really an electromagnetic sensor. And the reason why I would be careful to say we could adapt to this is because we have evolved over, you know, biology has evolved over millions of years. And there's some things that quite literally have not changed at all for millions and millions of years. And the Earth's natural magnetic field, the native EMFs are very, very important, and they have been rooted in how biology functions. And now there's so much noise. It's really, we've just like littered ourselves with noise in the environment. And when the noise is so high, the signal becomes distorted. And in engineering, it's called a signal to noise ratio. And that leads to cellular miscommunication and dysfunction. And that's what we're seeing. And unfortunately, your mitochondria are what get, you know, affected the most because they're so electromagnetically, you know, driven. And you can actually, and they mute 10 times faster than your nuclear genome, and that gets passed down generation on generation. So the fact that you're seeing, you know, autism skyrocketing and chronic disease younger and younger is a sign of like multi-generational mitochondrial dysfunction. I do think we can figure stuff out to, you know, have technology in this environment and exist, and maybe we will evolve or adapt, but it's really something that we need to recognize as an area of research that is
for sure
most important to explore. And that's, it's funny, all the research we get is from like migratory birds and, you know, Elon wanting to go to Mars, and that's why astronauts that go up into space to come back, they have osteoporosis and they have all these issues, is because they've been completely removed from the electromagnetic environment of the the earth. And if that's what it's going to take to, you know, study this stuff and, you know, figure out how to replicate it, then I'm all for it. But I think for one, it's so fascinating to think about that's how like our biology is driven. Two, we have such an area to learn and improve. And three, you know, if you just get outside and, you know, embrace nature and use technology a bit wiser, you're going to be fine. But thinking that this stuff isn't, you know, a real problem is a bit ignorant, and it's just unfortunate. So I just want to spread education and, you know, help drive this forward. And with Daylight, we have such a unique opportunity to do so, which is awesome.
Sure. It, in some ways, it's kind of remarkable that we are still here, given the toxic soup we've created.
Exactly. We are resilient. That's for damn sure. Yeah. But
we're stubborn.
We need to give ourselves a fighting chance as well. So that's what's, you know, that, and that's where the sleep, you know, people are always like, oh, my grandpa was smoking a pack a day and lived to 100 or drank whiskey all the time. It's like, yeah, that dude probably worked outside. He got sunrise. He wasn't on cell phones staring at screens all day. He was, you know, the toxin to lifestyle threshold was quite low in comparison to now. Ooh, we're just being hit from all angles, and it doesn't have to be that way. But because of, you know, podcasts like yourself, you know, getting this education out there, I feel like the tide is turning in the right direction. And I think we have the knowledge, resources, capability to figure this all out. And yeah, it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I'm glad that we're here to watch it too. You mentioned something about maybe putting infrared light into the daylight. You also mentioned something that I don't think I've ever heard, that 50% of the sun's light is red and infrared. And I knew that the red and infrared is useful. I got one of those panels I tinker with, and it definitely does something. But I've never heard that it's that much. I didn't realize that the sun is that much red. So the infrared is what's driving the heat that we feel from the sun. So you're saying you're going to put infrared in the daylight where it'd be emitting that? Does that mean it'd be... Why would you do that?
Near infrared specifically. Infrared is a vast, vast spectrum. We're talking like 700 nanometers to like 100 micrometers, I think. I don't know. You can quote me on that. But it's vast. It's like way bigger than the entire visible spectrum by far. And
oh, really?
You know, some of it makes it like near infrared comes to the Earth's surface. Like some of the mid-infrared spectrum comes to the Earth. Some of it gets filtered in our atmosphere. And then a lot of the far infrared. And yeah, heat is a part of that spectrum. I mean, the human body emits infrared as well. You know, that's heat that's being dissipated, helps regulate body temperature. If you shine, at night, infrared cameras and night vision goggles, it's all based off infrared. So we're light shows in many, you know, different regards, and also heat shows, and water plays a big role in that as well. So if we can add beneficial light back to the spectrum, and also it makes it more balanced, it makes it more similar to candles and fire and campfires, to us, that's getting, you know, even closer to nature, and those exist, and it should be possible. So yeah, future product, hope that we can do that. But if you want to go down this near infrared light rabbit hole, it's super fascinating. There's new discoveries coming out from like Scott Zimmerman, Russell Ryder, that have found that near infrared light exposure during the day actually induces melatonin production in the mitochondria. And melatonin is a whole rabbit hole that has way more functions as like a multifaceted antioxidant and, you know, autophagy, cell cleanup regulator, outside of, you know, just in your sleep and in your pineal gland. And yeah, it gets deep into the cell. Like near infrared light can go deep into the cell and biology in inches. We're talking penetration, and sometimes specific wavelengths, they don't even get absorbed. So they end up like scattering in your body until they, you know, hit where they need to go. So it's fascinating. And if you want to, I don't know if you ever, you know, gone on about water, but we're biologically, you know, like 60 to 75% water. Infants might be 80%, older folks maybe like 55-60%, and water is the most prevalent, you know, portion of biology from volume. Molecule count, it's like 99% water. And water is basically an electromagnetic antenna, and it absorbs frequencies and fields and emits them. So the electromagnetic environment has a tremendous impact on how water is functioning. That's why when you go in a high EMF area, you go on a flight, you leave the Earth's surface, you feel super dehydrated. And that's because it's impacting mitochondrial function, which mitochondria is where you produce water. So Gerald Pollack's work specifically has been found to like expand and structure water to a degree where it can actually hold a voltage and potentially be like an energy source for the body, a water battery. Now, we're getting very esoteric, and I would say this is what's cool is like it's where the electromagnetic aspects and kind of this whole area of research is just getting started. And it's nothing new. It's been around. It's been thrown around for the 20th century, but it's kind of been suppressed for a while as, you know, fringe. And, you know, that's not what centralized academia focuses on when they teach medical practitioners. None of them learn physics or electromagnetism, but it's so important. And it's something that, you know, at Daylight, we want to kind of bring back to the forefront. And it's all about just, you know, getting back in sync with nature.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I think a lot of people even now understand that mitochondria are making energy and maybe heat and maybe carbon dioxide, but it's also making water.
Yes.
In the form that we want it. You also alluded to something about the angle of light. You were like, when you were talking about, well, I could fix light, that's an easy thing. Does the angle in which light comes at us matter?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, our biology is very clever.
Hold on, before you say it. So there's been times where I'm a bit of a sun addict where I'll go out and I'll be getting sun. We got some lounge chairs and me and my daughter are both kind of sun worshipers. We're like looking out the window, like, did the sun hit the patio yet? Like, as soon as it does, like, who gets first dibs on the good lounge chair? But there's been times where I've tinkered with different positions and I've wondered where I'm laying in the sun sitting me from like the opposite angle. Like I turn the lounge chair around, whatever, just to, you know, even the tan or whatever. But there's part of me that's thinking like, is this like confusing some of the inner wisdom in my body? Because it's not normal to have the sun like coming up from like that, from the foot side, you know, when you're laying down.
That is a challenging one to answer, but I will say 100% overhead like sun, like we have photoreceptors in different areas of our body and eyes to where, you know, if the sun is only overhead, that's like the only time probably that you're going to be, you know, exposed to that. And of course, it's like a time incidence thing. But yeah, like if you want to prevent sleep disruption at nighttime, your lights should be as low angle as possible, because a high angle overhead bright light is, you know, it's simulating midday exposure. And that's from the visible light perspective, right? If you want to get really involved, electromagnetic fields, the way they interact with each other, the way resonance interacts with, you know, potential molecules in our body matters a lot about, you know, angle of incidence, perpendicularity. And that to me is a crazy thing to think about, because even like the Earth's natural magnetic field, the vector of the field coming out of the Earth is different depending on where you live, because at the poles, it's basically a 90 degree angle coming out of the Earth, and it's stronger at the poles because our Earth is basically a giant bar magnet. And, you know, migratory birds, they figured out, could actually use that angle of the magnetic field lines to transverse and find out where they need to go and geolocate. And there's studies showing, very fringe studies. Again, I'm not saying they're super credible, but, you know, people's grandmas used to say, sleep facing north, sleep with your head facing north. And there's a couple studies saying if you orientate your bed north to south, you'll be in line with the geomagnetic field. And that's better. If you're in the northern hemisphere, in the southern, maybe it's facing south. I don't know. But I can tell you for a fact that a lot of you know, interactions with electromagnetic fields and, you know, conductors, semiconductors, and other fields, whether it's like the Hall effect or there's some resonance kind of components to it, it depends on directionality of the field, and it can depend on polarity as well. So again, this is so complex and there's so many things going on, but...
What's the Hall effect? What did you just say? I never heard that.
Hall effect is this phenomenon where if you have a conductor or a semiconductor and it's in a magnetic field in, you know, the right direction, it can, it changes the electron flow. So in a conductor, you know, think of electrons just like moving along a straight line, yada, yada, it's great, there's current. And then all of a sudden it's in a magnetic field. It'll actually deviate the flow of electrons and then create a difference in potential, aka a voltage within that conductor or semiconductor itself. So there'll actually be a little voltage induced just from being in a magnetic field. And that can have a lot of impact on whatever system that's a part of. And, you know, it plays a big role in like quantum physics. And a lot of people are arguing as well, because
like that's an energy source being emerging energy source out of that magnetic field.
Yeah, because it's affecting the electron in the conductor or the semiconductor. And our biology has a lot of semiconductors. So some people online like to say that the Hall effect is very prevalent in our biology. And that's what, you know, a good person to read about and all this is Robert O. Becker. He wrote The Body Electric in the 80s.
Oh, yeah, I've heard that reference.
He was an orthopedic surgeon who figured out that bone was a semiconductor, collagen, appetite, doped with copper. And he used like electric currents, and he basically figured out that our body uses like very, you know, low intensity in relation, of course, to our, you know, understanding of current for healing signaling. And he used that to treat patients. And then he went big into, you know, EMF research and ultimately became a big proponent that man-made electromagnetic fields are probably very detrimental for our biology. And he was like the first guy to get canceled, you know. He went on 60 Minutes in the 80s and was like, yeah, the Navy's building an antenna that's probably going to be really bad for your health, and they just canceled him. So it was
That episode still
You can look up Robert O. Becker 60 Minutes, and it's the reporter just asks him Shrebs, like, do you find like there's potential negative effects of 60 hertz, or actually it's a different frequency electromagnetic field. So he was just like, yeah. And, you know, then they interview the Navy commander or something. It's a cool one. Him, Andrew Marino. I mean, again, the EMF conversation goes back years. And I mean, there's a lot of stories where, like, we were in a Cold War with Russia. Russia was blasting our embassy in Moscow with a microwave signal to basically, like, make fun of us, saying, like, oh, the U.S. doesn't think EMFs are bad for your health. We're just going to blast your embassy with a microwave for 15 years. And it so happened that like three or five ambassadors or representatives or whatever you call them got cancer in that time period. And Nixon,
they admitted to that, or
you can look it up. It's called the Moscow signal. I don't think Russia ever admitted, but the U.S. like documents got exposed that this was happening over like more than a decade.
Crazy.
Kissinger was involved and Nixon. And yeah, it was part of the Cold War. It's pretty funny.
Well, funny. That's one way to look at it. It's terrifying. Well, this was a lot of stuff. You know, I reached out because I was like, oh, this computer thing's cool. Let's chat with them and learn more. We definitely went in different directions. This was fun. Getting back to the daylight computer, is there anything else you want to add to it before we wrap this up, Tristan?
I mean, I just want to say that, you know, we're just getting started and we really are excited about this opportunity to figure out technology that's more synergistic with humanity and, you know, has a neutral feel, potentially even a positive effect on, you know, our health or wellness or productivity. And yeah, we're building out our own ecosystem. We really think we're going to be this generation's Apple, but centered around these principles. We have a tablet form factor as our first product, but we want to do like a V2 of a tablet and then a phone and then a computer and, you know, monitor. We can scale this to a bunch of different products. And like I mentioned before, we see ourselves almost like an environmental design company. And we want this to be a grassroots movement. And we think the biggest impact we're going to have is on the next generation. Because right now, we think giving iPads to two-year-olds and having them on screens all day and one-to-one learning, which is now the standard, is really setting them up for failure. And you see mental health issues, you know, skyrocketing. You see all these developmental and chronic disease proliferating at younger and younger ages. And it does not have to be that way. So we want to be a big driving force in telling moms and parents that, hey, we have healthier technology available. We want to hear from you. We want this to be a community-driven movement. We want to get into schools. We want to get into universities and businesses and make this the standard. And, you know, hopefully we also embark change in other companies and more startups kind of follow suit. But right now, you know, we're on this path and we're really excited. The feedback has been incredible since we launched, and it shows that the timing is right and ripe for us to really make a difference. So yeah, that's kind of our mission and we're not going to stop.
That's awesome. I'm excited to see some of these other products. I would definitely like to have a monitor with that stuff. Where do people get one?
Yeah. So our website is daylightcomputer.com. On social media, we're at Daylight Co. I don't know when this is going to come out. We might have, you know, full price orders for sale. We've kind of been in this, you know, we sold out and then we're back on sale briefly and then we sold out again. So As a hardware startup, it is quite challenging, you know, from an inventory and cash flow perspective. As you can imagine, we're trying to compete with, you know, the big boys out here. So we appreciate everyone's patience in that. And yeah, you can place no matter what, a $100 deposit at worst case to get, you know, next spot in line for the Daily Computer. And we should have a lot more inventory coming in spring and summer of 2025.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I did. I placed the $100 and then I think a few weeks later got
an
email. Message like it's ready, you pay the difference. It was very reasonably priced and it's awesome. So I'm excited. Tristan, thanks for taking the time and coming on. And I hope you guys enjoyed it. And if you think this sounds interesting, go check it out. Check out daylightcomputer.com. And if you do get one, share with the community, you know, what you think about it. And always grateful for everybody's listening. And I hope everyone out there has a great day.